Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
We're talking football with the professor, John Clayton. If you guys have questions for John, you know the drill. Text him in to 710-710. We'll try to get to some of your questions before we let him go for the day. Hello, John.
Hello, guys.
Did you get out to minicamp today?
I did not, no.
You did not? Okay.
No.
It was too sunny and beautiful for John.
Yeah. No, it's like the story I'm working on, I had a 1,500-word story I had to do for the Washington Post, and then I had to do two other stories. And so the Post wanted the story for tomorrow morning, so I had to get the 1,500 words pretty well done by this afternoon. So that being the case, it prevented me from going over there. But I did listen to the Zoom press conference with Pete Carroll.
Yeah. What'd you think what Pete said? I mean, some of the things I thought, you know, they talked about the offense, and it sounds, John, like, and we've been talking about this today, that Shane Waldron's a really good communicator, and it seems like just everything we're hearing, everybody's happy picking up this offense.
Yeah, I mean, good communicator, good teacher, and I love the comment that he said that there's more complexities to this offense, but it's also easier to learn. And so it's like what he's thinking is that you can do more and it's still being easy. And of course, I mean, it's a learning curve right now to pick up all the different schemes and adjustments and things of that nature. But it does seem like Shane's doing a fantastic job of being able to do it. And then they really, as expected, Russell Wilson has really hit it off with Shane. And that's encouraging. So I think that's good. And I think it's going to be exciting for the offense. And it was funny. They did ask him, you're going to run the ball more? And he says, I always get in trouble when we talk about running the ball more. Always get in trouble. But he says, one thing is, I think you can anticipate that we're going to be a balanced football team. And that's what we're going to do. And, of course, the other thing that they're going to try to do is they can be a balanced football team and then also be able to do better on third downs, because he wants them to be 50-50 on third downs.
Yeah, and the other thing I was telling Dave I would love to see out of this offense, and I was wondering, all right, is it going to look completely different to the casual fan? Are they going to look at this version of the Seahawks and go, whoa, wow, this looks crazy, this is interesting, or is it going to look similar? And then B, John, I complained about it all last year and probably the year before, just pick up the pace here and there, mm-hmm. just to keep the defense off balance here and there, instead of what they routinely do is drain that play clock all the way down into the red numbers, and you're going, snap the ball, please snap the ball. It, for me, it just allows that defense to truly set up for what they're going to do, and the I guess the element of surprise is eliminated when you're doing that as often as they do.
It seems like that's addressed in his offense, because there's going to be a little bit more two tight end offense, in the sense that even though they were like 18% last year, there's going to be a little bit more, because the idea is, and you can see it in with the Rams when they were doing two tight ends, although they lost one certainly in Everett coming here, but also you look at San Francisco, they do it a little differently because they don't use as much two tight ends, but because they have Kyle Juszczyk and Juice, the fullback, comes out of a two-back system. And so they're a little bit different there. But again, the idea is faster tempo. And that's going to be all part of this. But faster tempo, creating more surprises that the defense just can't keep guessing on. So I think that's what's going over very well. And it seems like with the speed of the receivers and all that stuff, and I know that Penny Hart got a good review today by Pete Carroll for, really now being kind of in the mix to see if he can compete for the third or fourth wide receiver job, because Pete did say that Penny, hey, he did make the team last year, and he's had a great offseason.
He's one of those guys that everybody loved, too. I don't know what it was about him. I think it was just his willingness to – I know he ran scout team a lot. I don't know if maybe one week he played quarterback. I think I heard a story. And then, special teams, everything. He's one of those team favorites, mm-hmm. Guys like – you were talking about the run game and whether or not Pete's going to go heavy-handed. The Rams, for whatever it's worth, they were seventh as far as attempts go. They ran the ball 473 times, and they were 10th in yardage with over 2,000 yards running the ball. So it's not like this was just this pass-happy offense. And if we're looking at what Shane Waldron, if he's doing what they did down in L.A. last year, I mean, this is a team that ran the heck out of the ball, mm-hmm. really. I mean, if you're top 10, that's in attempts. Yeah, you're going to run the ball. I don't think I don't think you're going to notice any difference as far as the run game. The one thing I would say, though, if a run play, you know, fails or they don't pick something up, Pete Carroll's going to get blamed.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no doubt. No doubt.
Yep.
Yeah. Anytime
we,
it has...
we just hope Russell Wilson doesn't storm out of his office.
Oh, that won't happen, John.
No, I know. Never happened.
Here's what I believe to be, and Dave and I have gone over this a million times, a misconception about Shane Waldron. And here's a question from the 253. Professor, do you predict the Rams reading Shane Waldron's play calls like a book, given that he used to call plays for them and they practice against him every day? He wasn't the offensive coordinator.
No, he wasn't.
It wasn't his offense. He wasn't calling the plays.
Mm-hmm. He was, you know, he was there as a passing game coordinator, but which was kind of the upgrade from when he started there on the original staff of Sean McVay as the tight ends coach. Mm-hmm. But no, he wasn't calling the play. It's Sean McVay. And so it's like, you know, I'm sure he put some nuances in there that's going to be a little bit different, because it's not like you can compare Russell Wilson with Jared Goff at quarterback, because Goff isn't mobile and really – in that last year, didn't know the system as well. And so, no, I think that you got Russell, who gets rid of the ball. He can't get rid of the ball quickly. He didn't last year, but now he's going to get rid of the ball quickly, and I think it's going to keep teams guessing.
Hey, John, I'm looking at this headline out of Chicago. Matt Nagy makes it clear that Justin Fields is behind Andy Dalton, but ahead of Nick Foles.
What happened to Nick Foles?
What happened to him?
Yeah, what?
Well, they tried to trade him, and they couldn't get anything for him. I mean, Philadelphia was interested, but he wasn't interested in going back to Philadelphia. So what ended up happening is that he had to kind of just sit there and kind of wait and see if there's another team that can pick him up in a trade. He's on a 3-year deal at $24 million, and they're not going to cut him because, again, he's got guarantees in his contract.
John, we had Paul Moyer on earlier, and we were talking about this defense, and he said he felt like they have the ability, the talent, to be a top 10. He didn't say they will, but he felt like they have the personnel and the talent to become a top 10 defense. What do you think?
I think they have a chance. I think it's going to be more top 13, but I think they have a chance to advance because, you know, look, they've got, you know, enough pass rushers now. And I know just about every day we're always asked about updates on different things like Josh Gordon and KJ Wright. And of course, Pete Carroll praised Cody Barton so well today. You kind of get the feeling that, you know, it's not going to be good for KJ unless something happens toward the start of training camp. But he did have an Alden Smith update.
Oh,
he's been in town. He's been over to the facility.
Yeah.
He seems to be reasonably thinking that he'll be at training camp. And that, you know, of course, his case, I think, is July 14th. But, you know, they didn't want to put him on the field because he's not, I guess, in the best of shape yet. But it looks like there's a decent chance that he's going to be there. But we did get an update on Pete Carroll on Alden Smith. And it does look like Alden's right now heading in the right direction.
Yeah. Well, and you saw Kimdiche out there as mm-hmm. well today, and he looked, you know, fit and ready to go. I think one guy that Pete talked about a lot, I think is an interesting player, is Puna Ford.
Yeah.
And they really see something in him because based on his contract. But Pete was talking today about what a handful he can be inside. Speaking of that, I mean, I think he could be like a surprise player this year. Anybody, John, that you would go out on a limb and say, hey, watch out for maybe Trey Flowers. I mean, you never know.
Trey got good reviews.
Yeah, from Pete. Did you hear that part?
Yeah, he did, because he said that you know, he's right in the mix. I mean, he's had a good off season, and so he got praise. Although they didn't bring up anything about Kandichi today, but you kind of get the feeling that he's there. But the big thing he said about Puna Ford is that, you know, his body is different because he's so short and so wide, but also he's got long arms.
Yeah.
And with the long arms, and you watch that with Cortez Kennedy, is that, you know, he can get leverage with those arms underneath the blocker and do some damage. And so and he's in great shape right now, and what was in great shape last year and played well last year. So I think that he's in a good place, and that's encouraging. Certainly, you know, there's enough competition that's going to be at the cornerback position. I know that Ben Verkerven, who people keep asking about, Pete said good things about him because at the same time he was mentioning Cody Barton and how well Cody's doing. So it's like there's some real positive things right now developing on defense. And particularly, you know, if Alden Smith comes back, think of the number of pass rushers they do have that can get to the quarterback.
Yeah, and you're right. There's lots of names that, mm-hmm. you know, that we've kind of forgotten about. But, yeah, it's kind of tough for BBK and Cody Barton because I see that too, man. They're both playing really well, but it's just going to be, you know, they're kind of packed at linebacker. So, well, you know, I don't know how those guys are going to get on the field. But
well, Barton is because, again, he's a starting strong side linebacker.
Well, see, and that's what I was saying today, too. And I know a lot of people have been talking about, well, Daryl Taylor, they like him. And I'm like, hey, look, Daryl Taylor's great. I mean, every once in a while. But I just don't think as a linebacker there's a way I'm not rooting against him. But I just, you know, if you compare him to Cody Barton, and that's where they were playing Cody today a little bit, at the strong side linebacker. So I feel like that's the way it's going to go. But Ben Berkervin, I mean, maybe a fill-in here and there, but, yeah, it's a tough – remember, it used to be kind of thin linebacker. It used to just be Bobby and KJ, and that's it.
Yeah. And you had KPL and people like that you were relying on. And, yeah, then you got Michael Kendricks in there, and it became deeper. Yeah, it's now you feel like you're stacked. Speaking of linebackers.
But by the way, I got to say that he said so many good things about Daryl Taylor today.
Yeah. Well, and that's what this question is, John, from the 425. Hey, John, what do Pete Carroll's positive comments on Daryl Taylor mean for KJ Wright?
Probably not coming back, although somebody brought up a good point, is that, you know, in those first two games, particularly the second game of the season where they play Tennessee out here, it's like a guy like KJ Wright coming off the edge is so important to try to stop Derrick Henry, because now here's Derrick Henry. He's got three receivers out there, you know, one being Julio Jones, and then, of course, Brown, and then also the third one being Josh Reynolds, who was in with the Rams last year. Is that it's hard to play eight in the box, and you need somebody strong off the edge. But, I mean, you know, Jordan Brooks is fast. You know, Barton's doing well. But the thing with Daryl Lewis is that, and I think he and Waldron got the most praise from Pete through the OTAs and the minicamp. Because what he said about Lewis is that, you know, he says because he came and was at the rookie minicamp, and he said he was the best prepared player as far as picking everything up from the beginning to the end. And so it's like, and after missing last year, that's so important. And so I think good things are ahead for Daryl Taylor. And we'll see how that goes. But I think that right now he's getting such good reviews that no, just mix him in. And, you know, I think the one thing that they'll do, because, again, there's some age, you know, with Benson Mayoa and definitely with Carlos Dunlap and that, you know, some age at some of the defensive line spots. So I think they can mix and match and, you know, not have guys out there for 80 plays and things like that on the defensive line. And, of course, you know, at the strong side linebacker position, if they're going to play a lot of nickel, then what's going to end up happening is that you know the strong side linebacker may only be on the field for 25-30 plays.
Hey, John, this is something maybe you have a database on, but I was looking at the NFL suspended 49ers Jordan Willis for 6 games for violating PED policy. I guess we had the Josh Gordon thing, but that was more controlled substances, but you know, it seems like these are down a little bit. Are you keeping track of that? It seems like this time of year is usually where you get either some knucklehead injury or, you know, somebody getting popped for a test.
Yeah, if my numbers are right, because they added Harrell from the Raiders and suspended him for the season, a former Raider, and he's out for the year because he had, I think, a substance issue. So they suspended him for the season. But I only counted up like about 9. Since the beginning of the offseason, 9. And so that's pretty good. I mean, that's not a bad number because, I mean, it can be, you know, sometimes at this time of the year, you know, 15 to 20, but it's right now roughly 9. So not that I keep track of it. But.
Yeah, I see that you're quite meticulous about. But do you think it's because they're easing some of the restrictions, or are they just getting better at not getting caught, the players?
Well, let's put it this way. you know the rookies, I mean, they're in good shape because, again, it's like they're scared enough that they're not going to be doing anything. But you notice these are veteran guys. And, of course, you're not getting tested if you're not going to be at the facility because you're boycotting. So I think that could be one of the reasons it's down. I mean, it was down, obviously, last year because nobody was being tested because there was no off-season program. But, no, I think what you're looking at is that, the fact that a lot of these guys, I mean, I don't know if Willis was there most of the training or most of the OTAs or not. But, at some point, whether it's a thing that you did during the off-season, whether it's going to be a positive test, you got to watch that.
What'd you make of what Cole Beasley had to say? He's not happy with the COVID protocols, the policy that the players' union agreed on, and he was saying the players' association is a joke. Call it something different. It's not for the players, and goes on to a big long thing there. But what'd you make of what he had to say?
I think it was a little bit of an overreaction. I mean, I know that the idea is that the players' association is trying to protect the players, but also it's like And I don't know where Cole is as far as vaccine or no vaccine, but the way that they came down with the ruling on protocols yesterday was very harsh against those who don't have the vaccine. And it makes you wonder, it's like, are you really not going to get the vaccine and become almost a non-member of the team? Because, I mean, look at the restrictions that are going to be there. I mean, number one, if you don't get the vaccine, it's not like taking one shot of Johnson & Johnson. It's a matter you're getting now seven shots a week. Because they're going to shoot you up every day with a test. Now, I don't know if they're going to do a swab test or whatever to test on having COVID. But you get tested every day. You have to wear a mask all the way through when you're inside the building. So that's a little scary. You can't eat in the dining room, and you know how great that dining room is over at the Seahawks, and so you can't eat in the dining room with the vaccinated players. You have to do something different. Have a box lunch sometime, I guess, somewhere in the locker room. Then you have to fly separately on a charter. You can't be on the team plane. And then you can be fined $14,000 if you have tested positive. And if you go to a party and the party has no masks or anything like that, if you're caught in a place that has more than, I think, what, 50 people or something like that, I mean, you can get a $50,000 fine. So it really came down with things that make you say, it's like, okay, get vaccinated.
Yeah, well, and look, I would not judge anybody for either side of, you know, if they do or don't. But, you know, the one that stood out to me might be the silliest, but it's the one that you can't dine in the dining room with. I mean, I feel like it could divide a team a little bit, you know, and that's something that you don't need. I wonder if they will maybe back off of that. I feel like they're making a big push right now, but that would be awfully weird if you would not allow teammates to sit together and have dinner.
Yeah, I think I don't think they're going to change on that.
Yeah, they could be in the huddle together and on the field together.
Yeah, exactly. That really doesn't make much sense to me, but it's early on. I'm sure that there will be, once everybody runs up against these, you know, protocols, there'll be some adjustments, I guess.
Well, I know the one thing that Pete Carroll did say is that after practice, that they had some kind of a vaccination exercise or whatever it was, a vaccination event.
Yeah, there was somebody out there with, I think the Pfizer vaccine that I think was out there at practice. So they're trying to make it easy for the players that decide to get it.
And what he's hopeful is, you know, that he knows that they're in a more positive spot, but if he's thinking that maybe if this event works out real well and maybe some people get the vaccine tomorrow, that they can be up to 70%.
Well, and the other thing, too, is if you do not, they were the best team as far as taking care of it. So, you know, they really did a good job with that last year. And I remember at one point Pete made it like a competition. He was like, they had their contact tracing chips and, you know, it was whatever team stayed or group stayed further apart. They won the contest. So yeah, he did a good job with it either way.
And I was counting up. I had to go. And again, sometimes it kind of slips through the cracks. But so far, and I know this probably predates the start of the OTAs and all that stuff. There's only like about five or six players that have tested positive for COVID-19. Now, Buda Baker's one of them. Penny Sewell was one of them, but he's back on the field now. But Buda Baker tested positive the other day.
Hey, John, I saw this story on Andy Reid responding to Le'Veon Bell, and it just shows who Andy Reid is. His quotes, "I'm pulling for him in the future. I really enjoyed my time with him here. I appreciated the way he handled things and did his business. He had some productive downs for us, but I'm pulling for him in the future. That's how I roll. People say things, they say stuff. I move on, and I wish him the best."
Yeah, classy.
You just talk about taking the high road when Le'Veon's out there. "I will never play for the Chiefs again. Never. I'd retire before I'd play for Andy Reid." It's like, man, it just speaks to who each of those guys are.
Well, like we talked about, is like I think that I just think Le'Veon's not into football as much, and I think that's been the way for the last couple of years because it surprised me when he went to Kansas City because okay, here it is, you get cut by the Jets, you want to try to find some place where you're going to get a chance to maybe play and get some money and all that stuff, put yourself in a position to show where you can do, but you take the easy way out to be the third string running back for a team that has a first round draft choice at running back. And so I think all he did was go there, collect the minimal amount of money he was going to make, try to get some playoff checks and a Super Bowl check, and then just take it easy. And that's, I think, exactly what he did.
Hey, John, in Pittsburgh, it looks like Mike Tomlin's building a personal relationship with Dwayne Haskins. And, you know, he goes from, you know, came from Washington, one great coach to another. So hopefully that will, you know, kind of turn him around. And it's kind of interesting to see if maybe down the road that could be their guy, the way Tomlin's investing in him anyway, as a not only a player but a person.
Well, you know that Dwayne Haskins changed his agents before signing with the Steelers.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. You know who his agent is?
Hmm.
Mike Tomlin's.
Oh. You know what I thought you were going to say, John?
What?
Mark Rogers.
No.
I'm kidding.
Dwayne's smarter than that.
Yeah. Oh, no, so they have the same agent?
Because what ended up happening is that right before the Steelers signed him, he changed agents to Mike Tomlin's agent and then signed the contract. So it's like, okay, you can see that they are paired up. And, you know, it's one where it's like, okay, let's do it that way and see how it can go.
John, appreciate it. We'll talk again tomorrow.
All right, sounds good.
There you go. If you missed any of today's Cold Hard Facts, brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill, just download the podcast at 710sports.com. I'm going to be very interested to see how this protocol works out with each building, because you've got Cole Beasley saying they didn't talk to me. Was there a vote? I didn't vote. Yeah. And it seems like there's dissatisfaction with the union for different reasons every year.
Well, and it seems like, you know, some of those things are pretty harsh. It's like, we're not punishing you, but you can't do this, that, and the other. And usually you think the Players Association, you know, is protecting the players and making sure that those kinds of things don't happen. I think what the NFL's doing is putting a really hard, you know, full court press on it in the beginning, and then waiting and seeing, like, okay, how is this going to shake out in reality? I mean, there's rules, but then once they're implemented, see how it works out.
Yeah. All right. Well, there you go. Coming up, who is the breakout player for the Seahawks team this season? Who's it going to be? We'll talk about that next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.